On this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we'll discuss the issue of immigration reform, and we'll get reaction to Donald Trump's fiery speech last night, where he outlined a hardline approach. He vowed the U.S. would build a wall on its border with Mexico, and that Mexico would pay for it. He vowed immediate deportation of those caught coming over the border. No more catch and release, as he put it. And he pledged zero tolerance for immigrants who break the law.
Zero tolerance for criminal aliens. Zero. 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 They don't come in here. They don't come in here. According to federal data, there are at least 2 million, 2 million, think of it, criminal aliens now inside of our country. 2 million people, criminal aliens. We will begin moving them out day one, as soon as I take office, day one.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, September 1st. So, what's your reaction to Donald Trump's immigration policy? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Denise Gilman, a clinical professor and the director of the Immigration Clinic at the University of Texas Law School. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, I just named 3 points that Donald Trump made in his speech. There were many more. What was your general reaction to what he had to say?
Well, it was interesting to see that he finally did become more specific and concrete. There had been a lot of back and forth about exactly what his immigration policy would be. But it was also very interesting to see that he did not back down at all from a very hardline approach to immigration, which typically is more of a primary campaign type approach to appeal to a very conservative base. It's unlikely to be very effective in the general campaign to have such a hardline approach to immigration, given that all surveys really do seem to indicate that a majority of the public is looking for some more rational approach to immigration that would allow for a route to legalization for many who are here in the country, and that's even among the Republican Party.
Yeah. Now, he was supposed to deliver this speech last week. There was much talk about whether he was softening his tone or even flip-flopping on his hardline approach. I guess those who thought he was softening his tone or changing his positions were mistaken.
I think that's right. He really sent a message that he was, if anything, going to double down on the message that he has had all along about the border wall, zero tolerance, as you said, and the rest. With that said, and although it was more specific in terms of what his overall approach would be, there were still many, many confusing aspects, perhaps even contradictory aspects of what he stated. And he talked about the fact that he was going to set priorities for deportation, but then he went ahead and listed out everybody who would be a priority, and it was everybody that I could possibly think of who could ever be deported. And then he said that he was going to deport all of those and only then think about what to do with those who are in the United States unlawfully, but that seems inconsistent. If they're all deported, then what is there left to think about?
Yeah. Did he say anything new or surprising to you?
No, I really don't think there was anything much new in it at all. He seemed to have spoken to experts enough to realize that there are some additional nuances to the question. He spoke a lot about visa overstays, recognizing that the border issues are really not even necessarily central to an immigration discussion, because there are many who come to the United States lawfully and fall out of status. So he had learned some additional information, but then he really didn't seem to address the nuances of how these issues play out. For example, he spoke a lot about the harm that had been caused to families who had lost a member of the family to crime by somebody who was not in the country lawfully. But he said nothing about what would happen with a policy of mass deportation that would separate families. We have many, many mixed status families in the United States. So a mass deportation policy would inevitably leave behind U.S. citizen spouses and children, cause grave circumstances of inability to support the family by losing a breadwinner and the like. And none of that was mentioned.
Before the speech, Trump traveled to Mexico for a somewhat last-minute meeting with Mexico's president, Enrique Peña Nieto. What did you make of that?
Well, that, it seems to me, really is almost a separate issue from immigration. I believe that was intended to convey a strength in his ability to speak with world leaders on equal footing. The Clinton campaign has questioned extensively his ability to really serve as president on the world stage. And so I believe it was really mostly about that and probably had some positive impact in that regard, that a world leader was willing to meet with him. In terms of the content of what they discussed, they didn't even seem to agree exactly after the meeting on what they had discussed regarding the border wall.
Yeah. Trump said we did not discuss the wall, and the Mexican president said, I told him right at the start, Trump, that Mexico was not paying for this wall.
That's right.
Yeah. And then last night, Donald Trump said that, you know, first thing, that we're going to build that wall, and Mexico is going to pay for it. Mexico may not know it, but Mexico is going to pay for it.
That's right. And again, there was no subtlety either about the border wall, which has been this major part of his platform for quite a long time now. But he never really discusses the previous attempts at constructing a border wall that were very, very difficult. You know, we're talking about 2,000 miles of border. And he said last night that the wall was going to go above and below the ground, that we're going to be sensors. When we previously attempted to construct just several hundred miles of border wall, it ended up having a cost of about $6 billion and really wasn't even completed as far as it was planned to be completed because of numerous difficulties ranging from the impact and the opposition of private property owners who were losing their land along the border to this wall, as well as many other considerations.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton used the occasion yesterday during the day before the speech to tweet a list of comments that Trump had made about Mexico, including Trump's calls to build the wall and make Mexico pay for it, his comments that killers and drugs and crime across the border into America, his comments that Mexico's government is corrupt. Was Trump in a difficult position going into that meeting, and do you think he succeeded in coming across as presidential?
Well, of course, we don't know what happened exactly in the meeting. I think the fact that he was able to meet with the president of a major country is significant for him. And his ability to portray himself as capable of being presidential. I don't think, though, that his efforts at this point in the campaign to claim a love for the Mexican people and for Mexican Americans in the United States will really sway anybody. It came after a long string of insults that seemed very heartfelt, and it seems unlikely that either the president of Mexico or Mexican Americans living in the United States will see a real switch in the way he perceives of Mexican migration and Mexican Americans living in the United States.
Gary on Facebook says, Mexico says they will never pay for the wall. Trump says nothing, especially since he already has it figured out that Mexico will pay for the wall through tariffs. Again, the media spins things to try to make Trump look bad, and again, it is easy to see through their bias. So do you sense the media is spinning things here?
I don't see much of that here at all. I mean, there are some really basic facts about what it will cost to build the border wall based on prior experience, which is very, very significant. There are international law considerations as well as diplomatic considerations that make it impossible to demand that the Mexican government pay the high cost of the wall. The Mexican Secretary of State some time back made the very good point that, you know, Mexican tax dollars, just as in the United States, are intended and must go legally to support programs and the administration of the government of Mexico, just as U.S. tax dollars must go to support U.S. programs.
We are talking with Denise Gilman, who is the director of the Immigration Clinic at the University of Texas Law School. We are talking about Donald Trump's immigration speech that he gave last night, talking about his hardline policy that he laid out, and we will welcome your reactions and your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This week on the campaign trail, we are looking at the issue of illegal immigration, immigration reform, and how these issues are playing out on the campaign trail. Our guest is Denise Gilman, a clinical professor and director of the Immigration Clinic at the University of Texas Law School. We're welcoming your reactions to Donald Trump's much-anticipated speech on immigration last night. Do you support Trump's more hard-line approach, or do you support Hillary Clinton's call for comprehensive immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship? Donald Trump doubled down with his no amnesty last night as well. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, Bob from Chippewa Falls called in to say, this is careless rhetoric and garbage. Trump doesn't know what he's talking about. His opinion, but there was some fact-checking. Was Trump telling us the truth, as far as you know, Denise Gilman?
Well, there were certainly some questionable statements that he made about what the border wall would cost, for example. He talked about how the Supreme Court had overruled Obama's executive action, DACA. We call it the expanded DACA, which really isn't quite the case. The Fifth Circuit put it on hold. The merits of that are still to be heard. The Supreme Court couldn't break a tie and so didn't touch it one way or the other. So there were certainly some questionable matters. And then there were just some sort of misleading statements. He spoke extensively about the fact that there were family members who had lost a family member because of crimes committed by those who were not in the country lawfully. He failed to comment on numerous studies that show that crime rates among immigrants are much lower, in fact, than crime rates per capita among the general community in the United States.
He mentioned said federal government statistics say that there are 2 million criminals who are immigrants in the U.S. Right now. Do we know that?
Well, I am very curious as to where he got the 2 million number, because he sounded as though he was citing some statistic. He said, we know exactly who these 2 million are. I'm really not quite sure where he pulled that number from. But even if there were a number of individuals who had some criminal conviction or interaction, he made no distinction between those who might have a traffic ticket. There really are criminal traffic tickets in some states. And when you look at the statistics, even under the current immigration policies, those who are included in the descriptor of criminal aliens often have very, very minor convictions. You also would want to know, is it something recent that happened that's a violent crime, or is it a decades-old marijuana possession conviction before you thought about this as a massive category? And then, of course, his claim that he would deport 2 million criminal aliens, as he calls them, without defining that term, within the first hour in office is preposterous, impossible. of course. But even if we don't take that quite at face value and just understand that he's about to begin deportations of numerous individuals who might have some criminal history, it would give real pause about whether this is a group that as an entire group should be deported without further consideration of how long ago a crime occurred, what family ties they have within the community, whether they've served whatever minor sentence was imposed by the court, and so whether there would be nuances to whether they should be deported.
To the phones we go. Our lines are full. Fred in West Bend is with us first. Hello, Fred.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call. My thoughts are on Donald Trump's speeches. For the most part, it was a very positive speech. It was great to hear that people let enter our country for what it is, and they want to become part of our country, not change our country. And I have another thought too about when somebody is an illegal alien and something happens, whether it's their fault or even if it's not a crime, a car accident or something like that, you really have no recourse. They have no insurance, and these families that are involved in crimes with illegals or mishaps are just kind of stuck.
Well, what did you, Fred, I'm sorry, when you said you thought Donald Trump's speech was positive, what was positive about it?
Well, I like the fact that, again, and I was trying to save time, so forgive me, but I like the fact that he talked about such positive vetting that people have to, the people that come in our country and come across our borders believe in our country and they don't want to change our country. They want to, you know, they want to be an American citizen for what America is. And that's important. I watch in employers that have to struggle to try to build prayer rooms or whatever, and our nation wasn't built that way. You know,
I'm not quite following. It sounded like you thought that immigrants were coming into this country to make positive contributions, but yet you thought Donald Trump was positive in his speech. So I'm not quite sure. But anyway, Denise Gilman, I guess your thoughts on. Your reaction to Fred's comments.
Yeah, I mean, I think what the caller was saying was actually more along the lines of he believes it to be positive to suggest that if people aren't willing to assimilate, and he the candidate used that term quite a bit, that they shouldn't be allowed to come or to remain in the United States. And my concern about that rhetoric is that this country has changed repeatedly over time and in very positive ways as a result of different immigration arrivals. And so, you know, much of the same rhetoric about, well, they don't want to immigrate, they want to keep their own cultures, they don't want to learn the language, those same things were said about successive generations of immigration, beginning with Southern Europe. You know, Italians and Spaniards were criticized for not wanting to integrate. Then around the World Wars, it was a claim that Germans did not want to become Americans in the true sense. German language was banned in the schools. And so Latin American immigration is really just sort of the latest group that is criticized for not wanting to integrate, when actually we see that over time, every wave of immigration has enriched our country very significantly. Has it led to change? Yes. Of course, we are not in the same position that we were in at the founding of our country when slavery was prevalent. But I think most of the public would see that as a good thing. Now, in terms of whether or not people who are affected by immigrants who are in the country, maybe unlawfully in terms of crime or car accidents or the rest, it really isn't the case that they have no recourse. Immigrants who are in this country are subject to the criminal justice system just like everybody else. The question is, should they be penalized twice for a failure to drive with a license in a particular case, for example? Or should they go through the criminal justice system and then be demanded to get their license? Many of those sorts of criminal offenses that have been vilified really are not they are a result of policies in place that make it impossible sometimes for immigrants to obtain a driver's license and therefore to obtain insurance. So a better way to approach the problem might actually be to ensure that there are avenues for immigrants to obtain those documents, to come out of the shadows, and therefore to participate more fully in society on all levels, including in the criminal justice system.
Fred also talked about vetting immigrants, and isn't Donald Trump doubling down and wants to have even more stringent vetting of immigrants?
Extreme vetting, he talked about. He put it really in the context of Syrian refugees, which, for those who know the refugee process, is frankly astounding. There is no more rigorous vetting process that could possibly take place. They go through multiple layers of vetting while they are abroad in their country of first refuge outside of Syria, both usually at an international level with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, as well as through U.S. immigration vetting processes before they ever even arrive in the United States. And in general, there are very rigorous vetting processes that all immigrants go through as they attempt to complete any paperwork within the U.S. immigration system.
We'll move on to another caller. Anne in Waukesha is with us. Hello, Anne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just think that this whole idea of Donald Trump feeling hatred for immigrants is just as bad, and it saddens me that he's attempting to divide the country in this way. If you recall in our history, at one point, Hitler was considered someone who was of no importance, and look what he did. So it really scares me that he is spewing this hatred, if you will, of people who are immigrants, when actually this country is, we are all immigrants. The only ones who were here were Native Americans, and everyone's family came from somewhere else. So I don't know what he's talking about when he talks about immigrants being criminals and what have you. So does this mean that he considers his wife a criminal as well? Because she is an immigrant. I mean, I just would encourage people to please vote and make sure that you vote for someone who is not spewing hatred and division and causing these problems, which I know personally that it scares me, it scares my family to hear such talk of this nature.
Does it scare you, Professor Gilman?
Frankly, yes. There's a level of vitriol that is frightening. There was recently a wonderful piece on Spanish language television by a reporter in Arizona who is married to a Mexican man who is now a U.S. citizen, describing how they met in Mexico and how he came originally without any status and how they've managed to make a life here. And really describing the extent to which she and her family have to feel some level of fear, not even so much as a result of the campaign itself, but as a result of the anger that has been stirred up among voters that will not easily go away.
Well, I am the first generation American. My father came here from Italy. But in Trump's defense, he doesn't want to deport me because my family immigrated here legally. He's talking about those who are here illegally. Isn't there a difference?
Well, of course, there is a difference with the understanding, however, that it is not always possible for categories of people who you would think could come legally or could obtain status to become legal once here to do so. The categories that we have currently for those who can obtain legal status in this country are very limited. You have to fit into very specific, limited boxes. And even then, for example, many people believe that marrying a United States citizen is an automatic route to citizenship. But there are very stringent limits on that. Under current law, if you came into the country without status and you marry a U.S. citizen, you will not be able to regularize your status in the United States. And so you have to look at what our parameters are for who can come legally before you make broad statements about the extent to which unlawful immigration is the target, because it's very simple, frankly, to turn unlawful immigration into legal immigration, recognizing the actual patterns by which people come to rejoin family, who come as refugees, who come for work, and making those categories legal. That's the easiest way to resolve the problem of some categories of irregular or unlawful migration. And it's also important to know, I should say, that we often talk about prior generations that came legally, but that requires one to understand the history of immigration in the United States, which actually did not develop into the current system whereby there are these very, very limited categories of people who can come until the 60s. It's really quite a modern era system. Mm-hmm. Before that, essentially, if you could get here and you didn't have some certain characteristics that would prevent you from being able to enter and become legal, such as having a criminal history in the home country, if you didn't have those, then you could automatically obtain status and eventually citizenship. Now it's much more restricted as to the categories that you can fit into.
Gary in Waukesha is with us. Hello, Gary.
Hello.
Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Yeah. What would you like to hear? What would you like me to respond to?
Well, Gary, you called in with a comment, so I want you to say what comment you called in for.
Yeah, my comment that I told the young lady that answered the phone is there's a distinct difference between common sense and bleeding heart liberalism, and those are the differences between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Well,
common sense, immigration. Looking at who's coming in, closing up the border, the Swiss cheese fence that we have down there where all the heroin, drugs, and human trafficking is taking place in and out of the United States. There's problems. The problems need to be fixed. There's heroin epidemics in most small towns and up to major cities in this country, as everyone is clearly aware of.
So Gary says... closing off the border, building that wall is common sense to stop heroin and other problems from coming into the U.S., Professor Gilman.
Well, so a couple things. First of all, of course, there is, in fact, a serious drug epidemic in some communities, and that's a very serious problem. It doesn't really have anything to do with immigration, unfortunately. In fact, there's a strong argument to be made that we do need to control that problem of demand for drugs as a way of working to exercise law enforcement against cartels and criminal trafficking that are, you know, potentially happening in Mexico and in Latin America, really as a problem that we need to solve on our side rather as solving on the other side of the border. But I do also want to talk about the extent to which there's a crisis at the border. There's been a lot of talk, including by Trump, of the crisis at the border, that people are coming across in large flows, that we don't know what's happening at the border. And it's just not true. If you look at the numbers, according to government statistics of what's happening at the border, in 2000, for example, in the year 2000, there were about 1.6 million unlawful border crossers. In 2014, which was sort of the height of the current crisis, as people called it, which I really disagree with that term, there were about 350,000 border crossers, so a dramatic decrease. And among those 350,000 or sort of so border crossers in 2014, a much larger proportion were actually women and children fleeing extreme violence, some of the highest murder rates in the world in Central America.
Let me jump in because we do have news coming up next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with the director of the Immigration Clinic at the University of Texas Law School, Denise Gilman, about the presidential candidates and immigration. On this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we are focusing in on immigration and immigration policies of the presidential candidates following Donald Trump's meeting yesterday with Mexico's president and his immigration speech in Phoenix last night. Our guest is Denise Gilman, a clinical professor and director of the Immigration Clinic at the University of Texas Law School. And we're welcoming your reactions and your questions to Donald Trump's immigration speech and whether you think he has the better approach or if you think Hillary Clinton and her comprehensive immigration reform, which includes a pathway to citizenship for those 11 million or so immigrants in the country illegally, is the way to go. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Drake Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Drake Cardine Show. Well, we heard Donald Trump say no amnesty again last night. He also said nobody even knows if there are 11 million immigrants in the country illegally, adding that the number could be 30 million or 5 million. Several independent estimates agree that 11 million is the number. Experts say it's impossible for the number to be as high or as low as Trump says. Professor Gilman, what do we know will happen to the 11 million in undocumented workers in the country illegally? What would happen to those immigrants under Trump's plans?
Well, he made very clear last night that he intends to deport anybody who has unlawful status. So it seems that he would certainly attempt to deport all 11 million. Whether or not that could ever realistically happen is still in doubt, as it has been all along, which is why every administration has had to set priorities for how it will handle immigration and which categories of people it will strive to enforce the laws around more vigorously. I should note that there is quite some consensus around the 11 million. There's actually quite some consensus that the number is diminishing already, if anything, and that's due to a range of factors, including the fact that net migration from Mexico is currently negative. So there are more people leaving the United States to go back to Mexico, either voluntarily or as a result of law enforcement, than there are arriving in the United States.
Let's take a call next from Gordon in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Gordon.
Hey, good morning, folks. Hey, I was wondering, what exactly are these sanctuary cities I hear so much about? I know Kate Steinle was murdered by illegal immigrant, and he was supposed to be deported or arrested two or three different times, but they let him loose. But, you know, just wondering, what exactly is a sanctuary city, and why is that good for America?
And during the speech last night, Donald Trump said that no federal funding for sanctuary cities. So what exactly is the sanctuary city, Professor Gilman?
That's a great question, particularly because Mr. Trump did not define the term, nor has it been defined carefully really by anybody. And so a lot of different scenarios are used to talk about sanctuary cities without any clarity, so it's not clear at all for which cities he'd be cutting off funding. For example, people sometimes talk about my city, Austin, Texas, as being a sanctuary city because police here have a commitment not to actively seek out undocumented migrants and seek out deportation. But in fact, if anybody here in Austin is taken down to the police department and their fingerprints are taken, that information is sent directly to ICE, just as it is in almost every jurisdiction around the country at this point in time. And in each of those situations, ICE can then, this is immigration enforcement, can then seek to pick up that individual from local jurisdictions. And so there are actually very few jurisdictions that can really be called a sanctuary city in the sense that most people think about it, of really shielding immigrants from having their information being provided to ICE or from having ICE pick them up.
Yeah, it seems to me that Milwaukee and Madison both get that label, though I think both cities in Wisconsin say they are not officially sanctuary cities. Is it in part that someone who looks Latino is pulled over in a traffic, for a traffic violation, they're not going to ask to see documentation papers?
That's what is meant in some locations. That may be your situation, situation there in Wisconsin, and that's essentially what the situation is here in Austin. But again, to be clear, if that information comes up, or even if it happens at the police station when fingerprints are taken, it will go to ICE. And ICE does and often still continues to ask for the individual to be held for additional time, and then they come to pick them up.
Yeah. So I guess I think our caller was wondering, talk some about that case that Donald Trump used to talk about the killers and the rapists coming into the country. I think it was that San Francisco where the woman was murdered by an undocumented immigrant?
Right. And San Francisco does have a slightly more robust sort of sanctuary plan in that the information still goes to ICE, and then ICE can still demand to pick a person up. There are some scenarios under which the San Francisco local jurisdiction will not hold the person additional time for ICE. And that, you know, has come up in some scenarios. In this particular case of that murder, it really seems more likely that the failure was with the criminal justice system that decided to go ahead and release the perpetrator from the criminal justice context, where if he had been held in the criminal justice context, as it seems likely that he should have been, then this would have never happened. It really wasn't so much about a failure to notify ICE or a failure to continue to hold to allow ICE to come pick the individual up. It was more of a decision within the criminal justice system to release the culprit.
Anne in Elkhorn is with us. Hi, Anne.
Good morning. I keep pounding out the facts because what I hear and see constantly is the fear of people motivated to support someone like Donald Trump. Their fear, their inability to adapt to change as opposed to trying to stop it, that's based in fear. You can't be reasonable with people who are afraid. So, you know, asking Trump supporters to be reasonable is really almost impossible because you hear it in their voices. They are motivated by fear, fear of change, fear for even physical fear, you know, fear of physical harm to themselves and the people they care about. So please continue to use the facts as you have used so well. It's wonderful to hear your guest using statistics and citing facts instead of just my opinion.
Thank you very much, Anne. Professor Gilman, you want to talk about, we're not talking about Trump supporters in general, but during this hour, we're talking about immigration policy specifically. There are a lot of people in this country who do, I mean, what do we know about, what do people want in terms of immigration policy in this country? Do we want that comprehensive immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship or not?
Well, so I do think that there has been a very significant effort by the Trump campaign to create that feeling of fear. So I do agree with the caller, and I appreciate that reflection because it's very true that in that he's wise to stir up that fear because it does make it more difficult to have a reasoned conversation. But we desperately need a reasoned conversation around these complex issues. These aren't easy issues. And if we allow ourselves to just go with a gut response, then results will not be positive for our society or for immigrants. In terms of public opinion around a path to regularization, the polls actually are pretty consistent in showing that a majority of the public does want to see a path to regularization for those who are in the country without status currently. You know, there are different ranges, and it, of course, depends on how the question is presented. But even among Republicans, for the most part, there's a majority that desire a path to regularization. Among Trump supporters, interestingly, specifically, not just Republicans, it is a minority that is seeking a path to regularization. And I think that ties into the caller's point about the way the issue has been presented as one of fear and danger.
Yeah. One aspect that we didn't get to that a caller who wanted to talk about dropped off, he wanted to talk about the way to get at the problem of immigration undocumented workers is to go after employers who employ them. Is that a part of Trump's plan or Hillary Clinton's plan, for that matter?
Right. Well, that he actually was not very clear about at all last night, which is interesting. He really did focus more on the migrants themselves, which elides the problem largely, or the question, because most of the undocumented population in the United States is here because there is a market for their services, and employers are looking for their work. And so you really would need to look at the program holistically, or at the situation holistically, both looking at the needs of employers and the needs of employees, and whether those employees are migrants or not, in order to get to a solution that best fits the needs of overall society in the United States. Employer sanctions have been proven to be largely ineffective in multiple ways. They don't really diminish the demand for labor because they're not applied to every worker, to every employer who hires undocumented workers, and it would be almost impossible to do so. So they don't really get at that demand side. What they do end up doing to a large extent is making workers, migrant or other, even more vulnerable, because they put a lot of power in the hands of employers to say that immigration enforcement will be called if there's any organizing at a workplace, or if there is any protest around conditions or wages.
Yeah. So just a minute to go. What do you expect to see or hear next on the campaign trail when it comes to immigration policy?
Right. Well, I expect that the Clinton campaign will try to poke holes in much of what candidate Trump said last night, and there are plenty of holes to poke. And hopefully there will be, on the part of the Clinton campaign, some more active proposals, affirmative proposals, about how the situation can be addressed in a way that best fits the needs of the community. I hope that she will talk about adjudication resources as well as just enforcement resources. The Trump campaign has focused a lot on deportations and increasing numbers of Border Patrol agents and law enforcement officers. Really what needs to happen, too, to make this system work is to increase immigration court resources and USCIS services side resources.
Thank you very much for being with us. Denise Gilman is with the University of Texas Law School.